All right, so this is actually our fifth session on the theology of creativity, and so I want to do a quick just kind of review of what we did since it's been like months since we were actually together doing this stuff. Andrew, you man of the slides, as well as everything else? Yeah. My AV guy is awesome. Yeah. All right. So we started by talking about just what creativity is, and kind of talked about it's the whole thing. It's the idea goes through a process to bring you to the result. And so when you're looking at a finished product, when you're looking at a whether it's a piece of art or something that has been made, you're looking at all of this. So there was an idea that then had to go through some sort of process to become an actual thing. And so with all this, what we focused on was just that creativity is much bigger than what we often think of it to be. And really, creativity is a part of all of our lives. Every decision we make is based in creativity, and it manifests itself in millions and millions of different ways. And I presented it this way just so that we didn't kind of draw that distinction between creative people and non-creative people. The reality is we are all creating all the time, and it's just a matter of whether or not we recognize it and whether or not we are actually working to bring our creativity in line with God's order. Okay, so we started by looking then at creation and kind of how God creates and kind of used that as a model for like what our creativity should look like. And so we looked at how God created in an ordered way, how God created for and around human beings, and that actually plays a role kind of what creativity looks like, as well as the fact that God creates for purpose. Then we looked at the Imago Dei, right, the image of God, and talked about what that means for kind of our part in being creative, how we are meant to bear the image or reflect who God is. We then looked at the cultural mandate, right, the cultural mandate to be fruitful, fill the earth, and subdue it. And we talked about how that kind of starts to give us some guidance as to what it looks like for us to be creators. We talked about how that command to subdue means to kind of bring things into this world that reflect God's order and bring his goodness into creation. And then we jumped forward a little bit in the story, and we talked about the tabernacle, and we talked about how God then used people's creativity to form the tabernacle, how he kind of gave kind of big commands, but then allowed their creativity to fill in the gaps. And we talked specifically about two guys, Bezalel and Aholiab, who were given by God to be those who created it. And so he used their gifts, he really gave them their gifts, in order to help create this holy space for God. Now, in all of this, we were looking at this kind of the positive side of creativity, trying to encourage you to create and look at what we are called to participate in. But it would be wrong of me in this series not to also give a warning. Right? Because if we're talking about the theology of creativity, we're talking about the big picture. We're talking about all of what the Bible tells us about creating. And the Bible also contains some warnings and kind of, kind of tells us about what happens when we create for the wrong reasons and in the wrong ways. And so that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to try to understand the dangers of creating and creativity and some of the lines that God has drawn to help guide us. Now, there's a lot of ways to do that. I could go through kind of all over and look at all the things that God has said, but I actually want to stay in kind of this narrative form. I want to show you how God, in the story that he is telling, actually reveals these things to us as he unfolds his story. So we're actually going to look at this section here between cultural mandate and the tabernacle. And for that, we're going to start in Genesis chapter 3 with the fall. Right, what the fall shows us is that there's a reason why things are not as they should be. Right, the fall shows us that sin comes in and actually mars our ability to create perfectly. Now, we're used to thinking about the fall and Adam and Eve's sin as a story of detachment from God, and it is certainly that. But it's also a description for us of what happens when we create in a way that doesn't fit in with how God created us to be. And so it begins with temptation, right? Satan deceives, and then the Bible gives us a description of why Eve is convinced, what it is that actually kind of pushes her over the edge. And it says this, Genesis 3:6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. So what lured Eve into sin? Okay. She saw that the tree was good for food. What else? Yep. And what did Satan tell her? Right, she would. He tells her that she could be like God, and so there's where we see this desire to make one wise. Right, we see it reflected. This is actually her echoing what Satan has said, saying, "Yeah, she actually bought that lie." Right, so we have that the food was, or the tree was good for food. It was desired to make one wise. One more. It looked good. It was a delight to the eyes. Now, what's interesting about this is this actually matches a lot of the reasons that people give for their appreciation of art and creativity. It's pleasurable, right? People say, oh, I really enjoy that. It's beautiful. Wow, that's a beautiful painting. I like that because I like to look at it. And then there's this idea of one of the things that always often is talked about in art, specifically on kind of the philosophical realm of art, is that it kind of opens a door. It helps us to look at the world differently. It helps to show us something we otherwise didn't see. It in a way, makes us wise. And so we can see kind of this, a little bit of a parallel, at least a connection between what's happening here and kind of the creative world. But I want to stop for a second and ask a question that I think is important not only to the theology of creativity, but also to just theology in general. And that is, why did God create something that's good for food, that's pleasurable, that's beautiful? Right? Why did he create that and then expect them not to actually eat it? And this is the parallel with creativity. Why did God create us to be creative and then tell us there's some reasons why that may not be good? I guess the way I phrased the question there probably is not super helpful.
Well, there's kind of this sense where God's saying, hey, if you trust me and obey me, that surpasses the beauty that you see here.
Yeah. Yeah, so God ultimately created all things good and delicious and beautiful. And the command to obey was not to say, hey, I'm going to hold this thing away from you. It was actually God saying, trusting me is the best possible thing for you. And the reason why this becomes really important to all theology is, and I think this came up actually in youth group this week, this idea of, is God the originator of sin? Because God created the fruit. They ate the fruit. Sin came into the world thus. And so people look at it and they think, oh, so the sin was in the fruit. No, the sin wasn't in the fruit. The sin was in the rebellion. So God created something good, but what actually brought sin into the world was people using what God created for good for their own purposes. And that helps us with creativity too. That's where creativity goes bad. When we start to use these skills and these gifts and these things that God has given us, but we start using them for our own means, we start to not use them in the way that He intended them to be used. And when the beauty that's meant to point to God becomes an end in itself. Ultimately, with Adam and Eve, they desired to have the things of God without God. They wanted wisdom without having to submit to God. They wanted to basically take that wisdom and go apply it apart from Him. And again, creativity can easily become that thing where we become obsessed with it on its own. So in this story, then, sin comes in and destroys. But in the curses that God gives to us, we see a very specific description of what it does, and it's connected with the cultural mandate that we talked about earlier. Right, here's what God says when he comes and talks to Adam and Eve. He says, to the woman, he said, I will surely multiply your pain and childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be contrary to your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you are taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So we talked about the cultural mandate, be fruitful, fill the earth, and subdue it. How does this apply specifically to that? What do we see happening here that actually acts against what God has called us to do? Right. That whole multiplying thing gets real painful real quick. Right? So all of a sudden, what was easy has now become difficult. Birth will be painful. There will be strife between husband and wife, so they will not work together. And that kind of plays out to all people. No longer will people work together to kind of subdue the earth. Now, instead of working to make these things happen, we will be fighting all the time, which we see all around us. The earth will even fight against humans, right? Cursed is the ground because of you. Now, this goes beyond just the thorns and the thistles. That means all the work that we try to do in this world is always going to kind of fight against us. Nothing is easy. Nobody has a job that is fun all the time. Even the people who find a job, they're like, this is exactly what I've always wanted to do. There are times when you're like, this is not what I want to do right now. And part of that is because it's working against you. At the end there, we also see that death comes into the world. No longer, again, with the idea of just kind of filling the earth and subduing it. If we lived forever, you could fill the earth up pretty quick. But when people are dying off, and then even the things that you're creating decay. This is what Ecclesiastes is about. Everything you make falls apart and dies. And, you know, this whole idea of you can't get the forward progress that you seem to, well, that you really want to and you think it should be possible. And so what all of this shows us is that creating becomes very difficult because of sin. And not only do we have to work really hard and the world is working against us, it also means that everything that we create is going to be tainted with sin. We no longer have this kind of purity of creation where everything that we're doing is good. We are bringing sin into the world in everything that we do. And so we need to think about our creative act, realizing that we are always drawn to sin, and taking that into account as we look at some of these warnings and as we move forward. So the existence of sin, the result of the fall, helps us to understand that the world is fighting against us, as well as that there's a motivation behind it to bring God's order back to his creation. Now, the next 8 chapters of the Bible describe how sin permeated the world and how it destroys. Much of it is rooted in creative acts, and so it's worth looking at. And so as the story goes forward, we see all these kind of stories that we know from Sunday school, stories we've heard before, but we don't necessarily think about in this way. So what's the next story in the Bible after Adam and Eve in the fall? Cain and Abel. Right, the next story is Cain and Abel. What's that story about? Murder. Right, the part of the story I want to look at is the reason why Cain is so mad. Right, what gets him to the point that he kills his brother? This is what it says. Is there a verse there? Yeah, there you go. This is Genesis 4. It says, in the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel brought the firstborn of his flock and their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you so angry, and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. So why does God accept Abel's offering and not Cain's?
Well, it's like sacrifice later on, you take animal sacrifice.
So God likes meat and not vegetables? That's the application? Yeah. Yeah, it actually doesn't tell us exactly like what's the difference between Cain and Abel's offerings, but what it tells us, God gives kind of a picture of why he's rejecting Cain's, and we can see there's something wrong with the way that Cain is bringing his offering. Right? God says in verse 7, if you do well, will you not be accepted? So there's something not well that he's doing that God implies that Cain knows exactly what that is. That Cain knows that he is not bringing this with the right heart. And so then what is God's warning to Cain? Right? If you do this, it will go well with you. If you do not, sin is crouching at your door, is what he tells him. Right? If your heart doesn't get right, this is going to go sideways for you really quick. It reminds me of the description or definition of where sin comes from. We get from James chapter 4. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and you do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. So what is it that Cain desires and does not have? What Abel has, which is what? Yeah, acceptance from God, a relationship with God. That's what Cain wants. But what Cain wants is Cain wants God to accept him on his terms. So he's coming to God and basically saying, I'm going to come, not in the way that you've asked me to, but on my own, and I'm expecting you then to give me what I want. And so God calls him to worship. Not for selfish gain. And he says, if you continue to be selfish, if you continue to focus on yourself, if you continue to focus on what you want and don't have, sin is crouching at your door. It will get you. And it does. Rather than changing his heart, he continues to move on in the same direction. And eventually, it makes him so angry with his brother that he kills him. And so the warning from this story is that creativity has a way of confusing this creator-creature distinction. When we forget who we are in relation to God, we are lured by sinful desires into using our gifts and abilities for our own glory. And when we do this, it's not just about being selfish. It's that our desire for recognition, like Cain's, lead us away from God and into sin. It justifies all sorts of things because we have moved away from God. And the next story in the Bible shows us how deep that goes if you follow that path. What is the next story in the Bible? Not that you're supposed to have all this memorized. It's Noah. Right? And how does the story of Noah begin? The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That does not sound good at all. It's like a couple of extra adjectives, just so you know. It was really bad. The Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So we see human beings weren't even attempting to live out the cultural mandate here anymore. They basically just gone off on their own. They're following their own selfish ways. They're doing whatever is the intention and the thoughts of their hearts are only evil continually. Instead of cultivating the earth, they are cultivating wickedness. And so God is going to reveal in this story the true nature of sin, what sin actually does, and the punishment that sin actually deserves. And so he selects a man, Noah. He encourages Noah to create. Now, Noah needs a lot of guidance. Noah does not know how to make an ark. So God gives him some descriptions. He says, it's going to be this big, it's going to be this tall, you're going to make it out of this. But God does not tell him how to pound every nail. He does not tell him how to cut every piece. And so Noah has to be very creative in how he is going to make this thing, how he is going to fulfill what God has called him to do. God gives him the idea, but again, there's need of creativity to accomplish it. Now, one of the main traits that Noah shows in all of this is perseverance and endurance. Because the ark was not built quickly, right? Noah's story is not about God commands him this, and a couple of days later, this happens. I mean, we're talking hundreds of years. And so he had to keep applying himself. He had to keep going, okay, what does it look like for me to create in within God's parameters, in God's order, over and over again, day after day, year after year, until he actually was finished with what God called him to do. And again, this is a reminder to us. It's not just about kind of building towards one quick thing, or it's not just about the moment. It's about continuing to channel your creativity in his direction and for his purposes for all time. Even when everyone around you is laughing at you because you are building a boat in the middle of the desert. So in this story, right, the flood comes, 40 days, 40 nights, starts to recede. Noah stops on top of Mount Ararat, comes out, he builds an altar, a rainbow in the sky, right? And all of this is part of God's story of salvation. And so, I mean, all of this can be told in a way that points specifically to Jesus and what God is doing in redemption. But there's also something here for us in the act of creating, something that God is doing here that helps us to see what our purpose is, what our calling is. And so in Genesis chapter 9, we see God say this. Whoa. Is there one more there before that? Nope. Okay, I'll just read it off of here. Genesis chapter 9, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." What does that sound like? Yeah, he's restating the cultural mandate. Why is God doing that? Why would he give Noah the same exact command that he gave Adam at the beginning? Yeah, there's a sense that a lot of stuff has changed, but some things haven't. God's making sure that Noah and we who are reading this lots and lots of years later recognize that God's plan for and purposes for us are still the same. Now, what's different about the cultural mandate now? What's different about giving it to Noah than when he gave it to Adam and Eve? Sin exists in the world. That's changed some things. There's no peer pressure. Yeah, I mean, all that sin brings and all of the things, I mean, the world has changed drastically. And one of the big things that we see is creativity in the beginning was almost, God didn't have to put very many parameters on Adam and Eve. It was like, go, enjoy the garden. There's that one tree, don't touch that, right? But everything else was free and open. And now what we see, through especially the beginning there of the Noah, there's a lot of wrong ways. There's a lot of things that are wrong channels. And so we see creativity now married to obedience in the story of Noah. That creativity, now we have to be very careful to make sure that it is in line with God's order. And so in the story of Noah, we see what sin does and the punishment it deserves. It also shows us how we can fulfill the cultural mandate in a world of sin, obeying God through creativity. Sin does not negate the original plan, but it does require us to be diligent to follow God's leading in everything, because we are going to be tempted, there are going to be challenges, there are going to be things that pull us away over and over again. Next story shows us a little bit about that. This is Tower of Babel. I'll just read that. Okay. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had bricks for stone and bitumen for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, "Behold, they are one people, and they have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there God the Lord confused the language of all the people on the earth. And from there, the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. Now, I'll just say this story affected me a lot when I was in architecture school, because I struggled with the ego that exists within the architecture world as a whole. There's so much about kind of like, again, being someone who creates, being someone who is going to put your stamp on the world, your kind of design style, all these sorts of things. And I saw all the pride that comes from being someone who creates. And so I always found it fitting that the story that the Bible includes to highlight the sin of self-obsession was about the building of a building. Now, why are the people building a tower? Make a name for themselves. Right? And to reach the heavens. So you have these two different pieces. They're trying to reach the heavens, which in one sense doesn't sound so bad. Like, oh, they want to get closer to God, but ultimately what they wanted to do is bring God on par with them. They wanted to come to God and say, we are equals. We have made it to the heavens. They want the glory. They want their name to be great. What's wrong with that? Doesn't God want us to have a lot of Instagram followers? What's wrong with that? Yeah, it becomes very easy. I mean, we're doing this all the time. It's very easy to start to believe that the things that we are, to allow ourselves to be pulled towards just glorifying ourselves, making a name for ourselves, making sure that we are getting the glory we think we deserve. And ultimately, God stops them, not because he's like, they're going to succeed. I'm so nervous about these people. But he's going, if they are allowed to keep pushing in this direction, they are going to become further and further from me. And if it's what's best for people is to be in relationship with God, he's actually saying, I'm not going to let them do what is absolutely worst for them by continuing on in this manner. What does this teach us about creativity? It can go awry. I mean, was what they made impressive? It's a great achievement. Yeah. But you see, even the greatest things, even the most impressive things that you can imagine, if we're doing them for the wrong motivations, God is not only not pleased with it, he sees that what it's doing is actually destroying us. It's, again, pulling us further from him. And so the warnings that we get in all these in these stories that we've looked at is that creativity and beauty can deceive us into believing that we can have good without God. It's Adam and Eve. It can get wrapped up with our identity to the extent that sin is able to control us. It's Cain and Abel. Creativity detached from God leads to destruction. It's the flood. And motivations affect whether or not our creative efforts are accomplishing or working against our created purpose. That's Babel. And actually, I'm just going to stop there. I got more to do, but